Part 1. Welcome to Be Neurokind, a podcast by a mother and daughter duo talking about all things neurodiverse. Hi, I'm Tracy.
Oh yeah, I'm Chloe.
Yep, there's a Chloe.
Yeah, I'm here too.
And we're going to be discussing all things PDA. We have called it today, What is PDA and Why I Can't? So, I'll make a start and then Chloe will add her views on what I've said. So PDA is known as pathological demand avoidance.
Such a silly name.
Chloe doesn't like the sort of affiliation with the word. Is it just pathological or the word demand? Is it either?
It's all of them. I don't avoid it.
Right.
Particularly, it's not like I'm avoiding all demands either. Because not a lot of things are actually demand-based.
No, okay.
Most of the time, it's more... Sometimes it's not even needs, it's wants.
Yeah.
Anything. It could be someone said, it could be I want to. And then not once. And also, we try and keep our life demand-free. So there's never really anything which is a demand for me to do. Everything's just me wanting to do something in my free time with no one even knowing about it.
Okay. So for people who don't really know what PDA is or really much about it, I'm going to read bits from credible websites and charities
and add your own little bit in,
and then we're going to add our little bits in of what our views are, and it will hopefully give people who are listening an understanding of what it is perceived to be, what is PDA. So our view is that PDA is on the autism spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to read a small caption from the PDA Society, which is a UK-based charity that champions for people with PDA. So they said it stands for pathological demand avoidance and is widely understood to be a profile on the autism spectrum. They also state that there are other terms which are known as persistent drive for autonomy.
Mm.
So that's, I've just read a small caption of that, and that's the introduction.
Yeah.
So what do you feel about the sort of other name they've given it? What a lot of current people are feeling, that's what they feel more represents them.
The persistent need for autonomy.
Yeah, persistent or pervasive drive for autonomy.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's all what the people want to call it. And if you're calling your type of PDA that's fine. I don't have any qualms with anyone using it. But personally, I don't quite agree with the term. Because I just don't feel like that's really what PDA is for me. But it is, again, a spectrum. So it might seem one way for some people and then not at all for others. But for me, it's never really based on autonomy whatsoever. Because half the time, it never really affects things people tell me to do. It's usually things that I want to do that it affects me the most. Or bodily functions, like I need to eat. I struggle to eat sometimes because eating is a need. And surely autonomy would mean that I would be able to eat when I feel hungry. Or play games when I want to play games in my free time. Because I find a lot of the time I'd want to make a craft thing or play a game with zero demand, but I can't manage to get myself to do it because I want to. And surely autonomy means doing what I want when I want to do it and not...
That's a fair point.
Yeah.
I think the word pathological is quite a strong...
I don't like it. It makes me feel a little bit too loopy. I'm not saying I'm not a little bit because... I can be sometimes, but I'm not completely insane, and that makes it feel a lot worse.
I think this term was brought about in, I think I read, 1983.
Yeah.
So it was a while ago, and maybe
quite
the
outdated,
Although I have kept something on my phone, which I'll read out later, although her recognition, the person who recognised PDA, of what the traits were on point. I think the name is not representative as a whole.
Of what it is,
and
really.
This is where the confusion is happening, because people are now using terms that sit well with them, which is fine, but for people's needing a medical diagnosis or recognition, if the names are being changed constantly, then it's not going to be taken seriously enough. And I think that's an issue. And it's a very young representation of PDA, so not many people know a lot about it, and there's still lots of research, and it is in terms of diagnosing people very young.
It's a part of autism.
It's a part of autism.
And being neurodivergent.
Yeah, it's just a neurodiversity that needs to be recognised. And there's a lot of places that still don't recognise it. So there is...
It's like how people with autism can have PDA.
Yes.
But not everyone with autism has it.
Yeah. So there's a lot of discussion about that as well. But having different terms for it can really affect how people are seeking information. And this is why we've just covered what people call it. I have read on other websites, I think childmind.org have said that there's other terms, as Chloe mentioned, persistent drive for autonomy. There's also extreme demand avoidance. Or the other one, which I actually thought was all right, was called rational demand avoidance. Because I do think Chloe actually rationalises.
Except for when I want to do something. I don't.
Yeah.
I can't think of a single rational reason why I can't eat food.
So there's a couple of terminologies that people use. My personal take on it is that it is an anxiety sort of driven need to avoid things that cause levels of anxiety or levels of excitement. So almost
any strong emotion, really.
A very strong emotion, and it just becomes so heightened that it dysregulates the body. Mm. And that's my interpretation of it. And I do think Chloe has managed particularly well because we have created a very safe, nurturing environment at home. And through her education, we've changed things to work with her neurodiversity. And I think that has helped her greatly. And that's why she's is very able and able to use her own voice and explain things to others. As many people know, she has her platform on Chloe Me Just Me, mm-hmm. and has been doing that for 7 years now.
Yep.
No. Ten years.
Oh, goodness.
She did it when she was seven.
That's a long number.
Yeah, it's
number.
The same time I've been home educating, so 10 years.
We're in double
year.
Digits.
Double digits. So that is just a little bit about what people call PDA, what the terms are, what I can then go.
I would say it actually helps because I've been doing GCSEs recently.
Okay.
I think the only reason why I haven't been feeling demands from that is because I have a really slow processing speed and it all happens so fast, so that really helps too with me coping with things that I usually wouldn't,
because it hasn't switched
it just
on
hasn't
yet.
Even processed yet. I'm gonna be real stressed after, but I don't have a quick enough processing
but we've
speed,
booked holidays, so we're gonna keep you distracted.
Yeah,
so
I'll just keep moving on to the next thing till it eventually catches up.
That's probably
me.
Not a healthy coping mechanism.
Don't do this, it's not good. It's just how it ended up.
Yeah, no, you do have time to sort of switch off, and that'll give you time to sort of process it all.
But I think that's why I just haven't really clocked in any of the PDA to it.
Well, I wouldn't act like that, because we have had the odd day where we've had certain words that Chloe finds triggering, or certain questions.
terrible with questions.
And she doesn't like certain questions. If she wants to answer it a particular way and she can't, that's when we get a very sort of reactive response from you.
Or when you can and just someone doesn't understand.
Yeah.
Because I, for some reason, parts of my brain doesn't realise that not everyone knows things that I do.
No.
And I don't know everything
and they're not
else
mind
that
readers.
Everyone knows.
They don't know what goes on in Chloe's. I think because Chloe's got, although she processes certain things slower, the way she understands things is incredibly fast and she picks things up really, really quickly. So when she's learnt things, she learns them at a very, very fast speed. And where I may, or other people may ask her a question, she can get quite frustrated that we're not on the same page. And even though we're genuinely showing an interest, she can get quite annoyed. I think that's where we see sort of PDA traits generally, is through her frustration with people not really being as equal as she is. Because I think if everything was an equal playing field for you, you'd find communication a lot easier.
Yeah.
But saying that, her communication skills are probably quite good in comparison to other people.
Also, there's a layer of stress for GCSEs that's laid on top of that, making me more reactive than usual.
It's not. Yeah, this is a level of stress that she's probably never had to deal with for a long time.
And it's something I won't have to deal with again. So.
No, it was something we wanted to avoid because we were going down the functional skills route.
But they changed the law last minute.
Well, it's not law. It's more the prerequisites for college have changed. Government have pushed different changes, making certain GCSEs very important, even though...
And I was born that funky day.
Yeah, she was born on the 1st of September, which means she kind of misses out on a year of education because we were promised a college place last year. And then she wouldn't have had to do the GCSEs. So had she been born a day before, she wouldn't have had to do what she's doing now.
Yeah, and that's why I'm mostly
unfortunate timing on that part. But saying that, she's been doing quite well. Apart from the odd, you'll live, you'll get by. So I've got on here, there's a website. So it's again the childmind.org. It says that PDA is a pattern of behaviour in which kids go to extremes to ignore or avoid anything they perceive as a demand. Would you say that is...
I do go to extremes to avoid certain things, but still, it doesn't have to be just demand-based, like I said earlier.
Yeah.
It can be a variety of things. Demands are very much included, so I understand why it is in the name, but personally, it's just I haven't gotten affected by that very much because I'm not really in the school environment or anywhere where there would be...
It's a very restrictive, it's not really a demand, I just think it's restrictive environments.
Yeah, because even then it's not really...
Where there's no sort of flexibility.
Yeah.
So I just think if you're in an environment, and this is, I think we've said this to many people we've worked with, is it's always been environmental. So the more she's in an environment where it's very restrictive, it's very coercive, mm-hmm. Or just really sort of pushy, it then creates this huge anxiety and wall that can't be penetrated, basically. She needs to escape that. And she will use her social skills to mostly avoid whatever's been presented to her, quite cleverly as well. I know from many times people have said it's very manipulative, her use of language, because she has a great skill set in how she explains herself, that people then become quite frustrated with Chloe because she can talk herself out of pretty much anything. She can also talk herself into many things as well. She gets so much things. She's met wherever we go, she comes back with new people, new things.
I know everyone in the town I go to, everyone. All the charity shops.
So there's a lot of positives as well about PDA. Anyway, so there's another description here that says, this is where I've just read off an Instagram post. I can't remember the person who sent it, but they just said that people with PDA or extreme levels of PDA, I think this person had said, they have limited window of tolerance before they automatically go into a heightened state of distress. And the standardised parental approaches for behaviour and conformity do not work.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
So
we have learnt that very early on.
Yeah, I think I kind of knew that straight away. I think the limited window of tolerance, though, I don't agree with.
No.
That term there is if you have a child at a very severe heightened stage. So they are constantly living a life where they are... on the edge.
And not really catered for.
No, so their needs are not met. So then any extra sort of demand placed will create that automatically go into a distress because they're always living on the bucket is incredibly full and about to spill sort of analogy there. So yes, that applies to PDAers that are living that life. If they are living a more sort of suited lifestyle to their neurodiversity, then I would say their window of tolerance is a lot lower because I could tell Chloe to put a plate out and she'll take her plate out. I could tell her if she asks for a drink.
I mean, I will do it very slowly, mind you.
Is that because you get dizzy?
That's because I get dizzy.
That's got nothing to do with PDA. But there is a lot of things that I could say that wouldn't even add to the bucket.
No.
It wouldn't be because I've said so many little sort of
things.
It'd
be
up.
Because of the general environment. And also, I found since I have a good environment, I can deal with a lot more stressful situations. Not that I put myself in them, it's just if it so happens, like going to a busy place.
Yeah, you can't control every environment.
Can't really control every environment.
But you're prepared for
them
a lot better.
I'm a lot better when it's like that. Whilst before, when I had a worse environment, say when I was in school, because you couldn't really control that either, until you took me out.
Mm.
Whenever we got to slightly busy places, that would be a massive stress for me because I would have already had that full bucket mentality. But now I can go somewhere, something can go wrong, a bunch of bad things can happen, and I'll still end up okay because I'd have the safe space to come back to, and it was unpredicted, and I knew it wasn't caused by anyone trying to do anything.
But you have that space to to de-stress and then regulate yourself and have that time off so you can then bring those levels back down again.
Also, I get control of the spaces that keeps me calm. So
so you can go, right, this is my safe corner. Well, you have a corner on the sofa. It's a very Big Bang Sheldon moment there.
Yeah.
Where there is Chloe's corner.
I don't like to stereotype,
but that is a very classic it's a classic one we can use. What else have I got here? So this is just where I've written some notes. Someone has said sensitive to perceiving a threat, which I agree with fully. So the tone of someone's voice, body language, being told what to do in a certain way, feelings of being unsafe and alone and needing comfort.
I think it also depends on the person.
And validation.
Too. For instance, if it's someone I don't really know who's asking me to do something in a stern way, I'd be more opposed to doing it if it was someone I know saying to do something in a stern way.
But you find the sort of stern, sort of loud tone quite difficult.
It was a good thing. It's also an external factor that who is saying it.
Yeah, that's sort of interesting for others to know. So
also,
my dad
always sounds angry. So
your dad's just got a loud, voice. And it was also going deaf, I'm sure of it. I think this morning is a good example because he works from home and he was on a meeting. So, and he was quite loud. And Chloe said, "Why is my dad angry?" I was like, "He's not angry. He's just in a meeting. He's being formal." So I think his formal voice.
I don't think he understands what formal means.
Well, so that is why. And as to me, it's just that's his voice. He's not angry. He is loud. He's always been loud when he talks. But that's just who he is. But she perceived it as an anger voice because of the
tone,
the tone or the loudness of it.
Not sure I always get paranoid in the mornings.
Yeah, that could be more to do with your Tourette's sort
of
thoughts.
Yeah, I know it's definitely
the PDA
Tourette's
sort
that
of
is,
thing.
Everything's heightened in the mornings.
Yeah, and it's also the unknowing because even though we go through the night before what we're going to do, what settles her, she always goes, "What are we doing tomorrow?"
I don't have
these are our plans.
Short-term memory.
No, yeah, a bit like Tori.
It's bizarre. I can learn things in an instant, but the second that I need to know what I'm doing the next day, I won't remember.
Yeah, no, we've tried different things, but the best thing we can do is just tell her again in the morning. Right, this is what we're doing. Oh, yeah, now
5 minutes
better.
Later, what are we doing again?
The NHS website, interestingly, said states that people with a PDA profile may use a number of strategies in response to demands. For example, delay tactics.
I do that a lot.
Yeah, that's why I kind of heightened my voice when delay tactic.
I'll do it in a minute. My favourite word, in a minute. Anywhere between now and a million years.
That's a Welsh thing as well, by the way. And they also said, I've lost my place now, distraction tactics.
Also one of my favourites.
Yeah. Shouting.
I don't use shouting.
Falling to the ground. You do that through dizziness.
Yeah, that's not intentional.
No. Saying body parts don't work.
That was me when I was little.
I was going to say.
I used to. Did you say the really dark thing I used to say?
The really dark. Yeah, let's go open that can of worms.
Yeah.
When we lived in a village, it was quite isolating. And I was going bananas. And I really needed a little walk, which was very little. And I managed to coerce Chloe out with a number of different methods. And within minutes, she threw herself onto the ground and announced quite loudly in front of passers-by and neighbours that she is dead.
And that you need...
I need to shovel and to bury her. How my four-year-old knew of these things, I cannot fathom, because she didn't have access to me. I honestly don't know where I got that from. Some story time book, which they do have some dark sort of things to them.
You need to bury me, apparently.
And she would not budge because she was therefore dead and I couldn't move. And that was her annunciation that we ain't walking any further. Like, luckily you were tiny.
I don't do that anymore.
No, luckily she was tiny and I could just grab her, lift her up, throw her over my shoulder and walk home in a bit. But yeah, we had then had to devise different ways of transportation, which involved a bike with a push handle, which we would push. Yeah, we had loads of fun, inventive things that encouraged her to go outside. So the less walking she did, the better then.
And now I just like walking.
You actually love walking.
I absolutely love walking now. So love going to the forest near us.
Yeah, I think it's just the fun distractions. But by then, I don't even know what the anxiety was. It was probably the not knowing where we were going. Because I would just say, probably the wrong terminology.
We're going for a walk.
And I didn't actually say where or why. And I think...
Or how long.
Or if even if I brought bubbles, because that was like the answer to everything when you were between four
and 16. It still is. If you brought bubbles, I'd go almost anywhere.
We've done it on holiday. We took you and your friends on holiday and the bubbles worked. So it's got... Oh, kite flying was another one.
Kite flying is a very valid option, but you need wind for that.
Yes.
So it can lead to a very big disappointment if it ever so slightly stops being windy.
A lot of people said, and also on the NHS website, it said saying body parts don't work. Again, when Chloe was younger, she would say her legs don't work, her arms don't work, they're just floppy. So I would say a lot of the
My legs still kind of don't work now.
But again, not to do with
it. Not to do with it.
They say negotiating. Yes, great negotiators. Even now, she will negotiate everything. But she has so much diplomacy and how she does it that I think people who don't know don't realise they're being negotiated. They just agree and go, great, Claire. Brilliant idea. Let's go with that.
Yeah, I've got a lot of free stuff. To going places and they show me products. I ask them about their products.
It's a skill. I think it's brilliant. She can get through life by negotiating a way through it. Escape. Yes, you would escape things. She had escape plans in school.
Yep.
We're not going to read that story again. You've done it for a book before, so it's there somewhere. And then they've said difficult or dangerous behaviour. I don't think we've ever really seen very... I've seen self-destructive behaviour when she was very young. From school, but not really. I don't think we ever got to that point because I already knew Chloe had the PDA profile. She was diagnosed when she was four, and pre to that, I had already kind of figured out it was definitely autism, but it was not what I was researching. And I had came across PDA sort of research files, so I was already creating stuff at home against a lot of people's sort of suggestions. To make it a very PDA friendly environment. So I don't think she ever got to the point that some behaviours.
Also, I don't really like destruction in the first place anyway. No. I don't like broken things. I get really upset still watching any Marvel films when they break the cities.
Yeah.
Cannot handle it. Because the amount of time that took to make.
Yeah. So I've got on here on my... Yeah, you don't like...
I don't like broken things. I hate
never have in films or anything
I
don't, like that.
I can watch them now because I know that they were made in a way to be broken in the perfect way, which is an art form in itself, but I cannot handle things being broken just for no reason. It hurts.
Yeah, I think that's a very autistic in general thing.
I like things looking perfect.
But I
nice.
Do know there are individuals on the PDA profile that can be quite destructive.
Yeah.
Chloe has had she's had two... And they were the male presentation of PDA, so I still have
one.
PDA friend?
No. Definitely PDA.
But we haven't seen destructive as in violent destructive.
No, not really,
or
but
aggression.
He's very, he doesn't realise he's been destructive.
No, he hasn't got that filter, or he hasn't had the sort of help or understanding, so he knows. But we have known people in the past, and they have been incredibly aggressive. Boundary pushing. One we don't see at all, or we don't see either actually, but one we knew before was always great with Chloe, but when he got home, incredibly destructive to his parents, and we would get phone calls. And saying he's thrown furniture around, what do we do? And he would only calm down if he spoke to Chloe or myself. And I think it was just because he recognised we understood and we didn't use terminologies.
But they used to, they didn't understand it at
all. No, they were learning about it and they were definitely trying. But there was too many rules and control and just, it just wasn't working for his neurodiversity. It did change when he started being around more people and obviously getting older. And then I think when he got friends and different things. Another was always aggressive and would have number of meltdowns. And again, it was because of the misunderstanding surrounding PDA. And unfortunately, if those needs are not met at home or in school, then the behaviours can become big outbursts.
Mm.
And they can get dangerous. Chloe was scared a lot of the time. And that's not a great feeling to have or be around. And it can affect friendships, especially if they're that dysregulated and they haven't got support or counselling or the right things in place for them, because they can just explode constantly because they're living that, again, that bucket is full. And it could be a really small thing, such as not liking a YouTube video the same as them. And it would be very, very small things that would make no sense that could set off this huge sort of explosion of emotions. And it can be quite frightening to experience. I said, we never really had that. We had things where Chloe was not eating when she was little. She was not going to the bathroom was the biggest.
Still annoying.
She would hold it in to the point that she was in agony.
It's because I was doing something.
Yeah, there was always something more important or, you know. And there's another website, which is, this is called spectrumnews.org. There's a few terminologies I don't like, and there's probably that on many websites because I don't agree with how people say, but they do give a description about how the person who found PDA, so the Elizabeth Newson was a professor at the University of Nottingham in the UK, and she coined the term in 1983 to describe, and they've said, a syndrome, which PDA isn't a syndrome, in which a person resists and avoids the ordinary demands of life, which I'd say that's pretty on point, even when complying is in their best nature or interest, which is what you were saying. Yeah. When you want to do something. So she it's definitely so had seen it in her studies working with children. According to Newson, the syndrome, which again, I don't like, behaviours can include trying to distract the authority figure who makes the request. That was Chloe going, yeah.
Yeah.
Making excuses, withdrawing into fantasy. Would you agree with withdrawing into fantasy?
When I was younger.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I don't use that.
No, and avoiding meaningful conversations, which you do with me sometimes when I want to have a talk. And then she goes,
I despise it. Every time you say, do you want to talk about something? I'm like, no.
Nope.
No, I don't. What's happened?
Yeah. So possibly to such a level to lead to meltdowns or panic attacks. And it says signs of PDA typically manifest early in life. And I think that was the major thing. A lot of things were when you were much younger and you probably couldn't communicate them as well. Whereas now she's a lot older, the communication flows a lot easier. I would say for those who are late diagnosed and have never had that diagnosis or help, then they may struggle to communicate their needs because they've been masking or they just don't realise, oh, this is a PDA thing. This is a trait that I need to be explaining. This is how I feel. So that will take a lot longer for older teens or adults to communicate their needs because they've had to hide them or think that they're wrong, which is unfortunate, but it does happen. It then says, since then, she and other clinicians and researchers have refined the definition to emphasise how people with PDA use social strategies, which you do, to avoid demands and to mask anxiety. I don't think you mask.
I don't mask anymore.
No. So
the only time I mask is sometimes when I'm trying to say a sentence and a really long tick's about to come out and I think I need to wait till I finish this or I'll forget.
But that's not really masking.
That's like 2 seconds.
Yeah. So, underlying process communication issues, Newson and her colleagues also outlined how to deal with children who have PDA profile by using approaches that differ from those commonly used with autistic children.
Though I would say with the masking, for some reason, with recent stress-induced disease, My body's found a new coping mechanism, which is called zoning out on the spot.
Yeah. And it doesn't, taking it's not ages to masking, come back to
it
life.
It just means that I just
switch off.
Switch off. Not even here. Stressful situation, gone.
Yeah, disassociate for a while, come yeah. back to reality.
It doesn't affect me whatsoever. I just lose a good few hours from my life here and there, and I don't even know yeah. what happened.
It's almost over, Chloe. You're nearly there. You can get there. So they say not to use approaches that are commonly used. So they describe, so rather than providing the children with highly structured routine, for instance, they emphasise novelty and variety.
And not the naughty stuff.
And not the naughty step's a big no-go.
Ridiculous.
Or... again, there'll be things like naughty step, reward charts.
Oh, I hate reward charts.
Stickers, Chloe. Even now, if someone says for fun, it. Like you go to the dentist,
I'm
and
not
they
allowed,
say,
I can't
do you want a
stickers.
Sticker? She won't wear them. It's even if they look so cool, and part of her thinks,
I have
like
a phone
it.
Case for that. That's yeah, where they go.
They will never be placed on her body because of the young schooling time she had. Is that coercion with a reward to do something they want you to do? And that,
I'm not being bribed.
You just see it as an...
Yeah, if they're going to bribe me, there's better things to pay me with than a bit of printed out paper.
So they got quite a few things right there. A bit of terminology, not happy with, but generally, it's right. They say that the discussion of PDA has been continued mostly in the UK, which is true. The UK seemed to be sort of the forefronters of pushing the PDA sort of terminologies and understanding for others. But it is dissolving now internationally into more areas. How would you describe what PDA is to you then?
It's annoying, what is it?
It is. Well, just let's say that you've got people listening or want to find out what PDA is. How would you explain it in layman's terms?
Layman's terms.
So, you know, or just a friend who wants to know what it actually is PDA, Chloe.
It's more of just, it comes with autism. Not every type of autism, but it's either you have autism and it, or you just have it.
I think everyone we've met with a PDA profile definitely has an autistic profile as well.
Yeah, but it's a thing that comes with my autism that makes it so if I want to do certain things too much, or if I get excited over something, or if I feel any strong emotion to do something. I find it difficult to do so because of that strong need and want to do things. Also, if someone else wants or needs me to do something, it can be difficult because they need or want me to do something.
And is that caused by anxiety?
I'm not quite sure. Because I can be completely calm and having a great day. And then I'll go, sit down and play my favourite game. And then my hands will just not let me select the game.
Okay.
And then I sit there and think, I'm going to get up and do something else. And then I'll keep that process until my body finally allows me to do one of the things I want to do.
So what Chloe has done in order to...
Except for those days I get stuck on the sofa. That happens sometimes.
Sometimes. But what Chloe has done in order to sort of help that process where she does feel very debilitated, really.
Oh,
she can't move forward. It's just feeling a bit of stuckness.
It's the worst when it just feels like I've got glued in place.
Yeah, that's a good analogy there. Yeah. Is what she has is a number of things on the go that she can pick up and drop off.
It's also great that I have quite the Game Pass on Xbox is helpful for when I want to play games.
Yeah.
Because of being able to download that massive library just for the Game Pass.
I think we knew someone again, and they didn't have access to many games, so we'd get frustrated that their either laptop couldn't work and run the games they want to play, or they would get annoyed because they couldn't pay for the games they want. So not having that choice made the games they only had
stressful,
them out, because they wanted to play, say with Chloe online, but then couldn't play the games because it had to be a choice of one or two.
But I like having that choice. Then if I try and go on a game and think I'm not feeling this today, I'm not going to be able to play this with enjoyment because my PDA is playing up, I'll just go through my library, get another one. If none of them feels right, I can just open up the store because of the free stuff,
or she'll then move on to something
or
different.
If
entirely.
I just can't play games that day, I'll go, I'll do a project
or listen to music. So it's a good sort of coping
drawing
mechanism.
On my iPad is one of the best things that's happened in a long time, though, because it's such a good zoning out thing for okay. when I don't really want to do much.
Chloe has a lot of hobbies, so which is probably an ADHD.
Yeah,
I
definitely.
We can label everything, but she's a hobby person, yeah. so she has a lot of things on the go. And there's
about
no,
to have more soon.
And there's no demand to finish them. We do have a number of unfinished projects.
And if there is a demand to finish them, it's a very long period of time to do.
They do eventually get picked up again, so
yeah.
It's
that's
good
why
to
I have them on
things.
Display in my
yeah. So we have a very Montessori style type of living. I don't actually like things on display. I prefer everything
I like
hidden
things
away.
On display.
I find with Chloe that where I've put things away in a room,
I don't know they're
she's
there.
Forgotten they've existed. So
this
we
is
are.
Why we're reworking my room.
We're reworking her room now because it. You know, she's got these amazing accessories and things for her clothes.
I don't remember. I have
and
them.
She forgets she got them because they're all in these little tiny tidied away drawers. But
that's why I'm gonna have them in open but hidden. Hidden.
Yeah.
So they're on view, but
so
not.
What we have in our living room is we have a couple of baskets. We have a sensory basket, which got sensory toys in. We have, at the moment, a crochet basket.
Crochet basket. We need to get some wool for one of my ongoing yeah. projects.
And then in her gaming room, she has sensory, another sensory basket.
It's a massive drawer
a massive
of sensory.
When her friends come over, they love it.
Oh, it's a
I think
giant
they use
tub.
It more. So we just have
it's
zones.
A good 2-foot-tall tub.
Yeah, she has... So we call it a gaming room. It's a garage extension that has like a tight.
It's space. Basically just the me room.
It's got a utility space and a small toilet, but then it's got sofas and a gaming area,
yeah.
and it's got a big dresser with all the hobbies in.
It's showing
so
stuff.
Got
all of, it's all
board games
in
the cupboard. So it's all a lot of things. It's all Chloe. So she has zones in there. So you've got her 3D printing area.
Yeah.
Where she does all the 3D printing and resin. That was her laptop area, which is why we're redesigning a room.
Yeah.
And then she has a sofa chill out area, and she's got things like your lyre.
Yep. I've restringed that recently.
So she'll do that late in the evenings, yeah. which is quite nice to hear. And then she's got a big telly and then storage underneath for different small consoles.
Yeah.
Like most of them are secondhand.
I get the telly in the living room soon, and I'm excited
yeah, when
for
your
that.
Dad invests in that. That's an ongoing
our telly, the one in the gaming room cuts off the very left side.
Of
so you
game.
Can't see if and that's where all the stats are.
Okay.
So you can never see how much health
soon.
You have.
Give her a couple of months.
It's very stressful.
So yeah, she has zones basically. So we're just saying we've set up little zones. She has a gaming
yeah.
zone, her creative zone.
The random zone.
Yeah,
there's little piles somewhere in there under
there's
my
little
desk.
Little piles of things. Oh, yeah, she's got loads of little books
yeah,
and things here.
That's
there
just
anywhere.
Random. We don't
so
look there.
I think having zones of things that they can go mm-hmm. to when they are feeling that sort of being stuck.
It's also how you used to home educate me when I was just came out of school because of the demands and stress.
Yeah.
Is you used to just, because you found that if you told me to do things or said we're doing this today, I'd be stressed not to be able to do it.
Yes.
But if you just put things on the table, I'll get naturally interested
so it's,
and do
it. It's called an invitation to play or an invitation to learn. And it's how many nurseries actually work. And that's.
I think they should do that for all schools.
They should do it for all schools.
It's not,
it certainly would work
it
really
would
well
work
for most
so
kids.
Much better.
So how she used to actually be not bad going into nursery. It was only when she turned 5... that she was a bit anxious going in before, but we were allowed as parents to go in with you. And something they did in her one nursery that we went to, because we did move a little bit, which didn't help. But
moved a lot.
That's another podcast.
Yeah.
But what they would do is the parent could go in with the child and do an activity, and they'd have about 5 activities out. So one was sand play. One
I
was
love
chalk,
that they changed it each day. I remember
and they
that
would have
so
a painting,
vividly.
And the parent would do an activity.
I liked when they had the dinosaur sandbox.
Yeah. Well, let's not go through all the things
I remember
they did.
Them all.
Of course you will. But I remember going in and doing an activity with you until you were settled. And then they'd have a snack time where you say goodbye. But because you were so distracted with the activities and the snacks, saying goodbye wasn't like, oh, my safe person is going now.
No, it's, oh, look, dinosaurs,
yeah.
my hyperfixation.
Yeah, so, and it worked. Oh, they'd have tables then. So even if she started missing me because she did have attachment issues and had separation anxiety, which is probably to do with your neurodiversity,
yeah.
and school's not working incredibly well for her, you know, the tables that they had set out would work.
Yeah.
So I kind of adopted that, but continued it for a very long time, which was...
Still do sometimes.
Still do sometimes. So I will just set something up. And obviously, when she was really young, it would just be natural curiosity. And it would be really hands-on.
Mm.
And I loved research. Pinterest was my best friend. And I would...
It was fun.
I would just use things. So learning to do letters, I'd use sand or sandpaper papers and anything textured or, and I would cut things up. I was very creative in how she would do learning and access things. You know, we didn't have a lot of money, so I would use lots of bits and pieces and do research. I remember research.
The sandpaper.
Yeah, you loved the sandpaper letters. When I researched them online, there was something like £50. I thought I could just buy that and make that myself.
Yeah.
So I tended to look for things that would help and then create them myself. I remember painting, staining wood for sorting. We did all sorts of things.
I love those.
I know you had a big first project for home ed was doing dinosaurs.
Yeah, I remember that vividly. So we did these, dinosaurs.
I can't remember what they call them, but we do these files. So they're big paper books, and I would print out these things, and you can make like flaps, and you open and close them and pull string.
It's all interactive.
So
like a pop-up book.
Like a pop-up book.
Massive pop-up book, so
it was kind of like a workbook, but not. It was just fun. And then obviously we'd let her take photos. Museums were a great source.
I mean, obviously we didn't get any live footage of dinosaurs, sadly, but...
but we took her to loads of places. So any interest she had was very interesting.
It was then Egypt.
Egypt.
Yeah.
And you did like to do something on cavemen, and we were doing cavemen paintings. And luckily the local art gallery museum at the time had a caveman exhibition.
Yeah.
What we then find we did later on with home ed, because I run events, is we'd come up with a theme, and then I talk to all the people we worked with. So I had set up two farms we had, and I say, look, we're doing Romans. So they would do something to do with farming and Romans, and then we go to the art gallery, go, we're doing Romans. I go, oh, we'll bring them up from underneath them down, because they had like a basement area, and they bring everything up, and we'll bring some costumes, we'll do this and this and this, and then we'd go and visit a National Trust that has a Roman grounds, and we would cover the entire topic by visiting all these places. And then I would run an activity at home which was art based, and we'd cover it all aspects by visiting all different places. So every time we did the topics, especially like KS3-ish type things, and it removed the demand for learning, because the learning was just really fun and inviting, interactive and social for you. I know not with every PDA individual craves social, but Chloe is a socialite at heart, so everything
only to people I know though.
Yeah, but we created a group that was inclusive, and they just felt safe.
Still have a very big social battery.
Yeah,
so, I like socializing, I just have a bigger social battery than most people. Of my friends.
You kind of switch off in the evening.
I said so. I have a bigger social battery than most of my friends, so I can see more people.
You cope better than they do.
But it's still a social battery, so when it runs out, I do just get zonked.
I think people don't see her when she's zonked or so.
Oh, you can see people constantly, yeah. The afternoon, I'm doing nothing.
Yeah. We have days where it's just, I'm going to watch my videos for a
good few
hours. I'm
going
to
put something on TV and just crochet mindlessly.
I think people's perception of Chloe is she copes so well, and they just think she keeps going. We always used to make jokes like it's the Energizer Bunny.
Yeah,
just keep going.
No, but even Energizer Bunny dies, the battery dies eventually.
It does. That's you. But they don't see that. They don't see how
the
we recharge.
The energy is powerful, but it does need a long recharge.
So I think anyone who wants to know about PDA, they do need to have that regulation, calm space, time, safe place. For Chloe, she needed safe people. So friendships are incredibly important, and safe friendships. Unfortunately, I think we've met some people that haven't been able to offer that safety, and that's caused a lot of upset, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And a lot of trauma again. And a lot of adults sort of this will be another podcast, but I just find a lot of adults have put a lot of pressure on Chloe to conform for their children.
Yeah.
Because their children are also autistic, and because Chloe advocates and is more aware and regulated.
It's like they almost forget that I am also a child here to enjoy the event.
Yeah, and also that you are also autistic.
Yeah.
And I think it's just almost forgotten, because she comes... Because a lot of PDAs do actually have, like, very high intelligence... can be quite charismatic, an amazing character.
If you have something shiny, I'm most likely to get it. Yeah.
I don't know how that comes into it, Chloe.
I'm charismatic. I'm good at talking to people.
Yeah. So she tends to have like a little following. They always call her a firefly. So people, for their fireflies and she's the light, they kind of just zone in onto her. But there's a lot of people that forget that, she's still a kid. And she's still autistic, and her needs always seem to be pushed aside because other needs are more, I want to say prevalent, but I think because their needs have not been met, their autistic traits are stronger, or their regulations are not as strong as Chloe's, but that doesn't mean she should do not enjoy something the same amount,
yeah,
or take a step back. And I think that's been a massive hurdle for us, is because we've
got, I've sat out of a lot of things because of
other people, yeah, because they've taken over, or they wanted to turn, or it's not like,
oh,
fair,
you'll
on
be
them
fine.
And they go, oh, Chloe, be all right, you've done it before, haven't you? And it's like, going, well, I set this up so Chloe can enjoy it, not so everyone else that came can do it and Chloe doesn't.
Yeah.
And what's the point of me organising
things?
But
like how
things?
I took sailing lessons.
What's that? Yeah.
And I never really got the one-on-one attention I needed from the...
From the guy that
from the guy
it.
Who
no.
was still teaching, because everyone else talked to him more.
Yeah, and he just did not see that her autism and her anxiety
was
presenting.
Because he was too busy looking for the people who were presenting visually.
That they were had anxiety.
Yeah, that they and had anxiety and actively acting terrified and shy.
Yeah, because not all...
Rather than me just casually explaining to him that I am a little bit nervous and I need you to repeat what you said. But because I was managed to voice that, he deemed me capable enough that he didn't need to repeat what he said.
Yeah, I think because she presents herself as not as anxious...
And I feel like if someone's voiced that they're stressed, you should deem them just as stressed as the person who looks visibly stressed.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem we've had, is Chloe's actually able to vocalise her upset.
And instead of actually looking stressed and shit, doing stress, I go up to you and go, hello, I'm feeling quite stressed right now, so I'm just letting you know if there's anything you can do to get me to a quieter space, that would be nice. And then they think, well, you're not that stressed, because you just told me.
And then a lot of children then just deem Chloe as, well, she's coping. I'll need her to help me.
Yeah.
And they've really taken that sort of from you. And
it ended up helping a lot of people, which isn't a bad thing.
No,
but
it's something you naturally do.
Yeah.
And we've always done as a family.
It's just that I've always ended up being the person who teaches in lessons where there already is a teacher.
Yes, and then
it's a little bit
should be the child.
Because I am also the one here to take the lesson too.
So I think with a lot of PDA individuals is they're quite capable and can do amazing things if in the right environment and feel very safe. And I think it's very important to have safe people and safe adults around them. So we've made the decision to split this podcast into two sections. So this is the end of PDA podcast part one. Make sure you tune in to part two. Thank you.